Damashek here. Make sure you check out the new episode of the Dave Damashek Football Program. Ike Taylor, Maurice Jones, Handsome Hank, and I conduct a Game of Thrones draft. We also are talking about running backs, Sam Bradford, and beyond. Check us out, iTunes, NFL.com/podcasts.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Call the fight. It's the best podcast around.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Oh, I love it. I agree with that. Matt Money Smith with the money drop there is the best pod.
His opinion, too, and he's close friends with quite a few other podcasters around here.
Yeah, and the former manager of the Irish alt-rock group, the Cranberries. So fit that into the narrative as well somehow, if you must.
That's an amazing career. I mean, it's taken him a long time, I would say, to surpass that. That's an amazing achievement.
What, Money was the manager of the Cranberries?
By the way, Money should come in to do an episode with us. I've asked him several times.
Well, he has an afternoon
radio show around
when we tape. So
great show, too. When you have a voice that sounds like the offspring of Tom Brokaw, your career is made for you.
He does have golden pipes. Good show today.
Zombie.
The worst. What is
Dying Condor.
The worst song in human creation. That was better than old Dolores did it.
My favorite singing voice is Wes. I love when Wes sings.
With their tanks and their bombs.
Wes's pitch and tone is unbeatable. But hearing Greg drop the zombie there.
Not again.
Former frontman for Delaware.
Yeah, well, that's true. You're bringing out those chops that are so famous. And again, if you do have any history of Delaware, which was Greg's prog goth rock band in the late
90s. Not true. When we had the meetup, people thought that was really a true thing, that I was in a goth band.
It is true.
It was not a goth
band. We've seen the images of you.
You were dressing like a goth.
You tickling the ivories as you sing about doom and gloom in suburban Massachusetts life. We remember this. But what we need is actual audio footage of your career. So if anyone, and I know there are people that listen to this show that have ties to Greg from back home, please reach out to us. Hit me up at Twitter. We will make sure to make it worth your while.
Even Greg's family. I mean, various members of your family listen to this show. They've got the goods.
They definitely don't have the goods.
They don't have photos of you when you were a youth.
But what we're looking for now is actual.
It's unusual.
They definitely
the master
have
recordings, if you will.
Greg, did they have a youth?
You know how Prince had the vault that has all his recordings that were unreleased? Mm. Somewhere in Martha's Vineyard, there's a vault.
A more valuable vault than the Prince vault.
Yes, that has all of Delaware's recordings. Yes or no, Greg?
That could not be less true. I barely had it. They definitely never heard it then, much less now.
Okay. All right. Today's show is a good one.
Pre-show grade?
Pre-show grade B+.
Of course.
We exceeded the pre-show grade on Monday's show, I thought, and some of the listeners that got back to us believe so as well. So what you don't want to do, Wes, is remember the – tell you a little story, Wes, about
– Don't go Vince Young Dream Team on me here.
The 2011 Philadelphia Eagles, known as the Dream Team. You don't put yourself in an A+.
How did
before.
I know where you were going?
Well, because we don't want to Dream Team ourselves.
Well, we could go B-. You could go even lower.
Yeah. But I believe in the show. See, that's why B+ is a nice place for us.
You found a good spot.
I would love to get Vince Young on the show, by the way. Imagine if he was just like regularly a part of the show 80 times a year.
I bet Gil Brandt, who works at the NFL, of course, could hook that up. He once called me up, Gil Brandt, when I was working for the NFL out of my apartment in New York, said, "Hey, Greg, would you like to talk to Vince Young?" and Vince Young was doing a workout that day for NFL teams. He was trying to make a comeback, and I said sure. And this all happened within 15 seconds, no warning. And he hands the phone to Vince Young, and I was on the phone with Vince Young. You can find this article somewhere in the NFL.com archives.
Did you in the article? Did you get into how it all happened?
I think I did. Yeah. I think I mentioned.
I feel like it would be a missed
God
opportunity
problem.
If
yeah.
you didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Today's show. We are going to get into the news around the NFL. That's why we're called the Around the NFL Podcast. Today is a big NFC North day. So if you're a fan of the other divisions in football, shut off your podcast after the news because we're not going to be talking about anybody else.
That's how you sell it.
But the NFC North. I am warning you, with peace and love to turn off this podcast after the news if you are expecting anything else other than NFC North power bombs. Guess we're going to get into it because Greg Rosenthal wrote a killer piece, part of our series that will be rolling out over the next few weeks. Projected starters for the NFC North. Headline, Bears on the Rise. And that didn't sit well with everyone in the NFC North. So we're going to get into that. Greg's starting some heat.
Very polarizing day for Greg Rosenthal.
And you know, Wes, you know as well as I do, and Mark obviously as well, Greg's always starting heat.
He's always honking in the newsroom.
He's honking. You could hear Greg doesn't sit near us exactly in the newsroom, but we could always hear him.
He was honking at somebody right before we came up for the podcast.
Tyler Dragon, who's honking about, I think, the Thunder not having a chance in the playoffs.
Well, after game one, yeah, he said they had no chance, and I tried to get a sandwich prop that they would win at least two or three games.
That's the ideal Greg proposition.
Yeah.
It's the ideal Greg target.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're honk, bro. You honk. It's okay. We like you, just like...
True or false, this morning, a woman called me the strong and silent type in our newsroom.
That is true. Yeah.
That's all. I rest my case.
Greg Rosenthal, regular John Wayne.
A first-timer to the newsroom? Someone that's embedded in our newsroom?
Someone you know. Sarah Deeker?
So that's the show for today. Well, behind the glass, there he is, Irishman. What's up, bud?
Nothing much. I'm thinking about we need to go out to karaoke to see what Greg really has going behind those pipes.
Not much.
Well, Greg's more, yeah.
Do some Wu-Tang, maybe.
You don't have to, like, you don't have to have a beautifully classically trained voice to have a great rock singer's voice. And that's what Delaware was about. It was kind of a little grungy, a little, you know, kind of under, it was almost the very nature of alternative music was what Delaware was.
Well, also telling that the band never existed beyond the milieu of middle school.
Let's do some news.
An issue with talent.
That's what it means. Really.
Well, agree to disagree.
We don't typically do drops from Anchorman in 2016. However, that is something we will get into a little bit later. A Detroit Lions haymaker thrown via social media at Greg Rosenthal.
Haymaker.
That we will get into a little bit later. That's called a tease in the business. But let's start.
Mark's got the vapors over here.
Oh, no. Again?
No, I'm all right.
Oh, no. You look a little pale, too.
I'm like 20 minutes out of the dentist chair. This is a little bit bizarre.
And you said you haven't eaten since last night, which is also bizarre.
Par for the course.
Let's start with Melvin Gordon, the Chargers running back, who not only had a tough rookie season, but also began Spice Rack's descent into madness. So it's really a notable player in NFL history. A lot of people are thinking, you know, the former first-round pick has a chance to bounce back in year two. However, it was revealed on Tuesday that Gordon underwent microfracture knee surgery this offseason. This according to Michael Gelkin of the Union Tribune in San Diego. He underwent the procedure in January and was given a recovery timetable of 4 to 6 months. He does not anticipate being limited in practices, believes he'll be ready for training camp. Hurt himself in a December 20th game, so his season was already going in a bad direction when this injury occurred, and then had this to say, I'm getting better, I'm not where I want to be, but I think I'm ahead of schedule, I'm sprinting pretty well, I'm cutting. Wes, after a very tough first year where the word bust started to get thrown around, this is literally like one of the last things you want to hear about a young running back.
Yeah, it is, and there are different degrees of microfracture. Some of them are very invasive and can alter a career, and others, as we've seen with guys like Marcus Colston, who's had several microfractures, and most recently Travis Kelce, it hasn't taken any speed or cutting ability away from Kelce, who had it after his rookie season. So it's hard to tell how this will affect Melvin Gordon in 2016 and going forward.
Vontae's perfect, too.
Yes.
At it. I mean, but it's much more of a case-by-case depending on the player's physical makeup, it seems, than other types of surgeries.
Their GM, Tom Telesco, said each one is different, and they're trying to make the case, and it was presented in this article, that this was a very low-impact surgery compared to other microfractures, although you always hear that. There's really no way to tell until they're on the field. But, yeah, what a nightmare for
this football. Injury didn't really – wasn't the cause of his disappointing rookie season. The injury happened December 20th. You know, very late in the season. So I think the cause of his rookie season was he hesitated at the line of scrimmage too often.
You know, I think he got better at that, though. I went and watched for that redrafting the running backs. I don't think he was bad down the stretch at all. He wasn't amazing, but he was a good receiver. I don't think he was hesitant. That offensive line was so bad. He had so many negative five-yard runs where he had nothing that he could possibly do that I give him a little bit of a pass for that. I was hopeful he was going to get a lot better this year.
On the plus side, he also had a couple instances where he'd blast off like a 20-yarder.
You know? You could see the attributes that the Chargers were excited about occasionally. You could see the burst, and you could see the receiving ability, and you could see they didn't add any running backs this offseason, so that shows a little.
We're really just trying to, you know, encourage keep Spice Rack above
Spice Rack
above water here.
Redemption
above,
tour.
Well, above ground. Because things were getting a little dark last time.
Just in case anyone's wondering, no decision has been made about Spice Rack whether he will be allowed back on the program after his unhinged performance last week. Moving on, Julian Edelman, Patriots wide receiver, really has become, not counting Gronk, of course, Tom Brady's favorite target. And the guy delivers year after year. However, injuries continue to haunt the wideout. He recently underwent minor surgery, it was deemed. It's always minor surgery when it's not you, right, guys? On his left foot to reinsert a screw from a past procedure, a source informed of the situation told NFL media insider Ian Rappaport. Edelman was spotted wearing a protective boot at the Patriots facility on Wednesday. However, Greg, he is on track to return for training camp. There is absolutely nothing to worry about, is there?
There is. They always say on track to return for training camp. I mean, there's no rules based on injury reporting in the offseason. He broke the foot in November, right?
Mm-hmm.
He
not good.
Had a surgery then. Yep. They said after the season that he would not need a second surgery.
Yeah.
And here you are in May getting a second surgery.
Yep.
They wish they did it 4 months ago. Clearly, the pain didn't go away. He's had foot problems before. I believe he missed most of or half the 2012 season with a foot injury. So, you know, you don't want your number one receiver with a foot injury. That's bad business.
Storm clouds.
The Patriots love these small receivers who do slants and crossing routes because they fit with what Tom Brady does. But
do
small wide receivers are also injury prone.
This is the flute, how the flute keeps powering through.
Let's not forget about Chris Hogan.
Yes.
Oh, he's a
who's already essentially he's already leading the league in Pro Bowl votes right now. You know, it sounds like they're just like, this guy's going to just go in and set it on fire. I mean,
he's like the ultimate test, really.
Who said that?
Well, no, I just feel that when it comes to Chris Hogan, and even stuff I've written, because I trust the Patriots so much that when they, you know, stole him away from the Bills, in quotes, that it's like he's ticketed for the next, you know, shining possession receiver type role for them. And I love it because it will set Rex Ryan's mind and body on fire. He won't know what to do with that.
Area White on rocket ride to success.
He's a little more physical.
We aren't talking about Rex.
he is the ultimate test, though, Hogan. If he becomes a 100-catch Pro Bowl guy, literally the Patriots can take any one of those types
of
guys, those scrappy guys, and turn them into
a star. They'll probably have Josh Gordon a month from now.
Mark once wrote that Bill Belichick could turn Anne Hathaway into a 1,000-yard running back.
Is that true?
He can.
I'd worry about durability issues.
Anne's got some moves. By the way, you're stereotyping a little bit. Chris Hogan's got prototype size. I mean, he's a big receiver. He's an outside.
Yeah,
he's an outside receiver. He is not the same as I'm not saying he's a great
player. He's bigger. You're right.
He's not the same profile as Edelman and Amendola necessarily.
He's like basically Megatron when you compare physically.
He's 225 pounds.
He's not nearly as quick as
no,
Amendola.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
But to Chris's point, it's how they use receivers too. Now, I'm not kidding. I could see them getting Josh Gordon 40, 50 days from now, and everything changes in New England.
They do have some.
Mark's greatest fear.
It's not a fear.
Any
I see
prominent
it
Brown leaves the team.
It makes
acrimony
sense.
And becomes a Hall
of
Fame.
It makes sense for them, and it's going to happen.
It would.
It doesn't happen a lot.
Because right now
you feel like you act like it happens all the time. There's not a lot of Chris Carters.
It's going to happen.
If
to Greg's benefit.
If Edelman missed week one, their starting receivers are what? Hogan.
Amendola
and Malcolm Mitchell.
What?
I don't know.
With an untested quarterback with no experience behind center.
They'll be running two wideout sets with Martellus Bennett.
There you go.
I can't wait to watch that game. Arizona.
Three wideout sets. Mike
Deion Lewis out wide.
Let's move on, guys. The Oakland Raiders, they're looking to get a new stadium, and you can't blame them. It's a dump up there. What is it? What is the name?
Have you
of
guys
that
been
facility?
There?
It's now the Oco or something.
Oco.co. It used to be Oakland Alameda.
I can confirm from firsthand experience that it is. I mean, it's good if you're a Raiders fan and you just like chaos, yeah. But. As a visiting, as a fan of a visiting team.
In the year 2016, there is a baseball infield running through a football stadium. It's
right.
Incredible.
And
you guys ever go to an A's game, though?
Yes.
Thoroughly pleasant experience.
Love A's games.
Like, it's not a great stadium, but it was a lot of fun. I went there by myself.
Get in for like $6.
On a drive back to the East Coast.
Were you in a strawberry truck?
I was just by myself in a, I think it was an old beat-up Nissan Sentra. Like,
sounds suspicious.
Mid-90s.
Fun fact, there will never be a batting champion in Oakland because they have so much foul ground. It's not built for baseball or football.
True.
And they have a sewage break like every 3 years. The whole place needs to be raised. Anyway, so Raiders owner Mark Davis, he's poking around. He couldn't get to L.A., so now he's looking at Vegas, which is wildly intriguing as an idea. He met with the Southern Nevada Tourism Infrastructure Committee. Those guys know how to party. On April 28th and pledged $500 million towards the construction of a $1.4 billion, 65,000-seat dome stadium. You know, a lot of, now, the cynic, or perhaps the person that knows how this type of business works, building stadiums and professional sports, will say the Vegas is being played for leverage as Al Davis tries to get a new facility, either where he is now in Oakland or maybe, I don't know, San Diego, maybe L.A. However, the mayor of Vegas does not believe so. Carolyn Goodman had this to say. Mark Davis has assured us that that Las Vegas is not getting played in a Raiders stadium deal. I know we will have a team. There's a lot of buzz around this. Is this something that might actually happen? I don't know.
I think so. I think it has a legit chance. When they made that last announcement and pledged the money, and if they can get the local support to match it, like it sounded like, okay, this is a real possibility, and I don't know if it's snuck up on the NFL or not, but I think it's moved a little quicker than the NFL expected. But the NFL seems pretty open to it. I mean, the NFL has not shot it down, and Jerry Jones today, or I believe Tuesday, said, you know, I think Vegas is one of the crown jewel communities in the U.S., and he's all for moving the team to Vegas.
West doesn't agree with that.
The worst city in the entire country.
Well,
I think there's legitimate concern of is there a local fan base, and definitely is there a big media market, because it's a small media market. It's kind of like concerts there. If you're not a huge band, don't do well, because there's not a lot of people that just live there that are going to concerts.
There's
I mean, number one, could you pick a better franchise for Las Vegas than the Raiders? And people from L.A., which has a huge Raiders fan base, go to Vegas at the first notice on Friday. Oh, right, people going to Vegas, drive right over. It couldn't be an easier drive, and you can make it a whole weekend out of it. You've got a built-in West Coast fan base that could get there easily.
And I'll give Mark Davis a little credit here too, because this is totally something Papa would do, because you know the NFL.
Something Papa did. Oakland's seen this before. Al Davis asked for a stadium. Oh, yeah. They wouldn't give it to him, so he went to L.A.
But the idea specifically of Vegas, which is kind of a taboo type of a market for any professional sports outfit, that the Raiders say, if you won't give us a place in L.A., we're going to the one city that gives you the most creeps. Vegas!
Well, you know,
you're the creeps!
Like the old football movies where they couldn't get NFL licensing, so they'd have these wacky teams. Like Any Given Sunday, for instance, these insane teams from bizarre cities. The Vegas Raiders just feels like something
Makes
from a
sense.
Video game or a movie that didn't get NFL licensing. But I could warm up to it.
And everyone, you know, the number one thing you think about, okay, well, there's gambling there. That's a problem. Well, all the NFL tries to do is play more and more games in London. And everyone says, oh, we're going to move a team to London. Like, compared to Vegas, well, maybe not compared to Vegas, but, you know, sports betting could not be more popular and easier to do in London and more just not worried about as an evil of society. And they don't seem to have a problem with that. So why not? Maybe they're...
London isn't a monument to humanity's worst instincts like Las Vegas.
All I'm saying is
is not as bad. If you're from the UK, we have a sizable UK audience. That is Chris Wessling's opinion. I do not find Vegas to be that terrible a place.
I will never go there again.
I feel like after about 2 days there, I need like a shower and I got to get out of that.
That's what it's for. It's not a place you go for a week. Anybody that wants to go to Vegas for the first time, you
don't
go for a long time.
Yeah, well, you see what condition he was in last
time. That is exactly right. Case study.
Wait, I thought you were in the pro Spice camp.
I see a lot of things to like about Spice Rack, but no, but I would not say that moving to Vegas is something that Spice Rack is selling as an overall holistic move.
He loves
Spice
it. Rack,
based on his appearance.
Spice Rack in Vegas is like the documentary where the guy only eats fast food for a month and you see what happens to him. That's Spice Rack's life in Vegas.
Oh, guys.
Mentally, emotionally.
Chris knows him. You know,
bankrupt.
He told me he loved it there. Before everything went to hell in our relationship, we were hanging out atop a roof in Vegas under the sun and, you know, and by the pool. He said that that place sustained him in a great way. He loved it.
Well, we're all rooting for him except probably one or two people.
You know, you're playing both sides of the fence like we're playing Go Get My Lunch.
We're all rooting for him. Yeah, you know, you keep throwing these one or two people under the bus with some very shaky groundwork.
The Strattler.
Throwing it out there. Hey.
Hey, by the way,
Chip
Kelly got, canned in Philly. As we know, he ended up resurfacing with the 49ers. He was known, of course, as the genius in many circles for his early work with Philly and the idea that he was revolutionizing the game. You didn't hear that as much as the Eagles started to go into decline before he was let go. But now the genius tag is back, at least according to Garrett Celek, the tight end for the Niners, who described that the team's offense is much different in OTAs. It's a lot quicker, he said. We have hand signals, so you can't have 15 words through hand signals, stuff like that. It's got to be boom, boom, boom. So when you get less verbiage, it's easier to remember. It's kind of genius. The genius is back. People buying in.
Are you?
No, of course. I never did. I was never in on the genius. It always felt like a media construct that he was somebody that was going to see something no one else could see. He was just another failed college coach.
Well, for any new listeners, you famously and sarcastically every time he came up, did call him the genius. Mm.
I did.
We had a hallelujah drop or something that happened every
day. Yeah, we were looking for that drop, me and the Irishman, before the show, but it seems to be lost to history.
Our good friend and hero, Colleen Wolfe, I believe today, said that she would blow her brains out if anyone calls Chip a genius.
That was a private text, but yeah.
not anymore.
It seems unfortunate. It seems unfortunate for her to do that in the same week she's hosting HQ again on Friday. So
she's doing a great job on the network side.
I would like to arrange a head-to-head sit-down between Garrett Celek and Heath Evans and just see Heath froth at the mouth when Garrett mentions that Chip Kelly is a genius.
Mm. Well, how about the fact, Garrett Celek, his brother, played for Chip Kelly, so the family likes him. I think Brent Celek's been public liking him. And you're knocking him like, he was a failed ex-college coach. He was 10-6, two 10-6s and 1-7-9. So he has a winning record as an NFL head coach. He came in with offensive reputation. They finished second in yards, fifth in yards, top four in points, two out of the 3 years. I mean, it's not like he was a failed coach. He was a middle of the road.
Okay.
He was a little better than middle of the road, if you want to be critical.
He was a failed personnel guy, okay?
Yeah, that's fair.
And the team suffered. And it should be noted that it's not just strategy. A lot of the teams seem to despise the guy as well, something that probably is going to continue in San Francisco and, frankly, wherever he goes. So he needs to change a lot of his ways. Take a page out of the Tom Coughlin book, who learned how to get players to not hate him so much. That seems to be his biggest challenge. Step away from the personnel side. Just focus on strategy and get people not to think you're such a douche.
And to be fair, I mean, that a lot of coaches in their first job, that's probably more of the area to learn and grow in than the strategy. I don't think that there's anyone that questions that Chip Kelly can't put together a comprehensively intriguing offense. He can. But it was his defensive players who were out in the field for more than any other defense in the league that struggled with that concept. And, you know, people thought that Bill Belichick, after he left Cleveland, was removed from Cleveland, and then didn't take that Jets job. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, we both lived on the East Coast.
He did take the job.
He took it, but what happened over that 24-hour period, people thought Bill Belichick, if you listen to FAN, Mike and the Mad Dog, that Bill Belichick was a nutbag. They just thought that he had completely melted down and lost it as a human being. And he was viewed as someone that was anti-player, that players didn't like. So the question is, can Chip Kelly fix that part of his game?
Bill Belichick also resigned on a cocktail napkin. It was crazy, and I will never forgive you, Bill.
Well, it worked out all right for him.
Chip is going to have to be a genius, though. So even if he does learn how to deal with his players better and be a leader as a coach better, his wide receivers are still Torrey Smith, Quentin Patton, Bruce Ellington, and some undrafted guys we don't really know. And his quarterback is either Blaine Gabbert or Colin Kaepernick. I mean, that is the weakest quarterback wide receiver group in the league.
One question for the scientists, and Dan, you can chime in here too. Sure. Is Celek concerned about, you know, getting pushed by fifth string tight end Jerron Hamm?
Ooh, that is a
maybe you got to get some good press out there, and you got to say some nice things about your coach.
Hambone.
I've got nothing to say about the 49ers tight ends or anything else about their offense.
Thank you.
So let's move on. That's what's happening in the news. And now what you've all been waiting for. Again, turn off the podcast if you're not interested in the NFC North.
Such a bad boy, Dan, when you break out those words.
Because
the
now,
Anadi. I mean, talk about jumping up on the masculinity ranking. Wow.
Oh, now we have masculinity rankings.
This is getting hard to track. No, but honestly, now it's time to talk about the NFC North. And Greg Rosenthal, a lot of people, sometimes I think it's easy for this group to forget about it because we work with Greg on a day-to-day basis. But Greg, the Roto World founder, brick by brick.
That's not true.
Both in terms of HTML and also just physically built the building where the young Roto World scribes.
Wow. That's high up in the masculinity ranking. Physically building the building.
Would craft their blurbs. Guy knows his stuff. Greg, the boss.
Can't deny it.
That's why he got the name of the boss. That's why he is the boss. And he went through each of the teams in the NFC North and broke down the rosters and. We'll start with the drama here because after it was posted on the Around the NFL Twitter account, which you could follow us at Around the NFL. I hope you're following us by now. Greg, it was posted. It was linked out. And what happened was the Chicago Bears, Greg, very complimentary towards the Bears roster, immediately respond to Greg and the world with a GIF or GIF, depending on what you want to call it, of Tom Cruise from Top Gun. Putting on his sunglasses and smiling. So they were pleased with what Greg wrote about the Bears. The Lions, however, not so much. The Lions, they follow up with a gif of Ron Burgundy. Do we still have that, Brandon?
Yes, sir.
That's what it means. Really?
Well, agree to disagree.
They said that, you know, listen, Greg's got a problem. And then Eric Ebron of the Lions follows in and quote retweets Greg's tweet that said the Lions roster looks worse the more you look at it. And then Ebron writes, Twitter is to voice your opinions. We will make you eat those ones you choose. Greg, let's start there then. Before we get into the Bears, let's get into the Lions. First of all, your heat with Eric Ebron, former first-round pick, tight end. Address it.
No heat. I did enjoy.
So you think.
Well, that's true. I did enjoy the immediate tweet back to him that said you're better at tweeting than you are at catching passes.
Wow.
But that was not.
Did you write that?
No, I did not.
That would have been.
I did.
he did not either.
It's aggressive. But,
no, I thought Ebron, if he's going to, you know, I like, you know, he's sticking up for his roster. He did it in a relatively professional, respectful way. He wasn't coming at me. The tweet that really annoyed the Lions and got them going said the Lions roster is worse the more you look at it. Because you think about the Lions and you think, wow, okay, they got some big-name players on offense with Stafford and Golden Tate and Marvin Jones. Not bad. And Ebron's all right. They have some big-time players on defense, Ansa, Levy, if he's healthy, Darius Slay. But when you start looking past that a little bit, some of their positions are terrible. And I think if you go through their position groups, tell me the position group on the Lions that's better than average. Because their receivers fall off an absolute cliff after their two solid starters.
Oof.
Abdullah and Riddick is not above average running back group. And then when you get to defense, Devin Taylor, who's never been a starter, is a starter. They have no depth behind him whatsoever. Nevin Lawson is their number two cornerback and nothing behind him. safety, they're hoping either Raphael Bush or a fourth round pick is going to start there. They just have big time holes, like craters, where they may be among the league worst at their positions.
Nevin Lawson sounds like a butler.
Right. And that's their number two cornerback.
With all due respect, you mentioned the wide receiver core is weak after 1-2. Jeremy Curley is literally the one player John Idzik ever gave a contract to with the Jets. So that has to stand for something, right?
Then as soon as he gave him that contract, the Jets couldn't wait to replace him.
I used to like Curley, so maybe he could make a comeback, but he did not look like himself the last
time. Your point is well taken. There is no above-average position group on this roster. And I know Lions fans are hanging on Matthew Stafford's improvement down the stretch under Cooter time. But this, Matthew Stafford is the most unpredictable quarterback in the NFL.
On top of it.
Who knows which version you're going to get next year?
Yeah, and I think it's a stretch to say that it's easy to believe in Jim Caldwell's ability to take what they have and make so much more out of it. That didn't happen last year. And it's just systematic on Twitter that you go do research. I think what you tweeted, anyone that's been doing the homework says, yeah, he's right. The Bears have improved. The Lions are, potentially dirt nap material. And then you got these team Twitter sites, which could not be more tedious with their GIF thing. I mean, dating back to last season, it is one of the most ponderous trends that we must deal with our eyeballs staring at Twitter is every single team site attacking each other or anyone that doesn't fall in line with their mantra and going after them with these clips. Enough.
No one else think it's funny how much Mark cares about the team sites and the GIFs?
Well, I do.
Absolutely.
They are annoying.
I thought I sensed from you too, Wes, as Dan is giving the GIF recap. I mean, you're not a big fan of the GIFs in general from the teams, this trend. I think you're on Mark's side on this.
I'm on Mark's side. Mark is like,
if you're not, I don't know who you are.
Mark has a visceral reaction to it. I just think it's kind of laughable.
It is highly smarmy, and it is very infrequently edgy or funny.
There was actually another. The Lions actually double gifted me.
Yeah, they
double rare move. They also did one where an old Batman is scratching his chin.
Batman cartoon.
That's the one I saw.
You know what it is, too? Ultimately, it's a shortcut. It's gotten to the point where now Twitter actually offers thousands of GIFs for people to choose from. Instead of having to come up with something cutting or witty or just expressing yourself through word, you just throw up a shot of a 1960s Batman cartoon stroking his chin.
Bingo.
You just earn your paycheck. Let's go to the huddle and get a muffin. It's a good job.
It's plainly annoying.
It's because the purpose isn't to communicate. The purpose is to play a game in which you're keeping track of how many retweets you can get.
Sometimes they're funny, though.
They did get a lot, though.
Sometimes.
They did get a lot. And to your point, Dan.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you're right. The GIF, sometimes it's a shorty.
Like you just pointed to Estelle Getty putting on sunglasses. That's funny at all times. I love Golden Girls.
That one was funny. But you're pointing out the GIF, it's kind of easy. They got, 500 retweets off of this, blah, blah, blah. Why couldn't they come up with something clever? Because I'll accept it if it's clever. And you know what? Carol Shelby, a Lions fan, quickly came up with something clever. I say the Lions roster looks worse the more you look at it. He responds kind of like your sideburns. And I like that.
That's good. That's solid. I mean, it's a man named Carol, huh? That's his problem. But anyway, let me just say, let's get back to the roster a second. And I will now make the case for the Lions offense.
Okay.
Matthew Stafford, 28 years old, now has become an Iron Man, sneaky Iron Man out of nowhere the last 5 years. Had a 5,000-yard season. Okay, Megatron was there. But we all know his talent that exists. Amir Abdullah.
So he's like the 13th best quarterback.
Okay.
He's a little better.
Okay, maybe he could flex up the top 10, 11.
Okay.
Amir Abdullah, we know the talent that he has. If he puts it together, he could be a game-changing type playmaker. Golden Tate, we know that he's a stud. Marvin Jones, I like that signing more than other people. I think he could be a really good number two. TJ Jones, don't know a ton about. Eric Ebron, 2 years ago, was supposed to be the best young tight end in the draft class. It has not come together for young Eric yet. But maybe with Megatron out of the picture, they find a role for him and he starts catching the ball. There are some players here that
he made some plays last year. He makes mistakes, but he makes some plays, Ebron.
The only thing about that entire screed in which I actually believed –
yeah.
Was that Amir Abdullah can become a good running back.
You don't believe Golden Tate's a great
No, I don't believe
receiver?
He's a stud. No, he's
really?
Borderline number two, number one. He's a really good number two.
Look, those starters, I don't have a huge problem with their skill position players in general, although the cliff at wide receiver is massive. It's more the lines that this used to be a strength for their team. Now you're drafting a first-round pick. We'll see if the offensive line is good. But at defensive end, it's Ansa and nothing. At defensive tackle, it's a bunch of guys who are probably league average or solid. At linebacker and in safety and cornerback, it's just a very thin team. You can see a lot of teams scoring.
The only
a lot
thing
of points.
That I'll I totally agree on paper, but it was last year at this time that we were looking at like Carolina's offense and saying, or sure. Once the Kelvin Benjamin injury happened, they're done. This thing is going to be cooked. And then you look at what Cam Newton produced last season. Not a single person saw that coming. A lot can change. But a lot, some of these players
absolutely.
We don't know about can develop.
My whole thing with the Lions, of course they could win 7 or 8 games, but my point is that they're going to have to overachieve a little bit to win 7 or 8 games, and that the ceiling for them is pretty low. And to me, they look more like a 5 or 6 win type of team.
And to Greg's point, the Panthers build through their lines.
Yeah.
I mean, their strength is their front seven and a pretty good offensive line. And the Lions, that's their biggest weakness.
They've tried. I mean, they have Warford, Tomlinson, Decker. Those are three guys they took pretty high. So there's potential for the offensive line to be good if those guys all play to their best.
And now let's turn our focus to the other team we're going to talk about today. And it is the Chicago Bears. Because to you, Greg, as you were putting together this piece on NFL.com, you saw the Bears as almost like the, what would you call it, the double negative or the team that's the opposite of
the inverse
of what the Lions are right now. A team that the more you look at the Lions, the worse they look. The Bears, it's the opposite.
Well, Wes has been honking about this for a while, and the more I thought about it, the more he's right. I mean, I'm putting together their starting lineups. I did not include Leonard Floyd, their number one pick. Yet, because that position is deep, Lamar Houston and Pernell McPhee. I didn't include their third-round pick, who they like a lot, who's going to get involved. They're the opposite of the Lions in that I think they have a lot of depth at a lot of positions where they can survive an injury, where they can rotate their defensive line. Now they have Trevathan and Darrell Freeman. They have a bad secondary.
I was going to ask you.
That's the weakness. I mean, they're not a perfect team.
It's a bunch of guys.
It's a bad secondary. You got to love that 1-2-3 wide receiver combination. They just got
don't
some
sleep
going
on Harold Jones Quarley at safety, Dan.
I sometimes do sleep on him.
Yeah, that was the one. That's why I like doing these exercises, just to find out about these teams. And that was someone I barely knew existed and is apparently the slight favorite to start at
quite an athlete.
I think in another life, I was playing stickball in Queens in the 1930s, and Eddie Goldman was my teammate.
He's a good player, though. That's a good example.
You like him. You
That's
like
a
him.
Good example of Those what tackle. The Bears are doing well, that he's a young, ascending player you could see getting better.
You mentioned their secondary as the fatal flaw. I look at their offensive line, and it would not surprise me if it ends up being the worst in the entire league.
Whoa. Really?
Yes. Kyle Long is a Pro Bowl player. The other four, tell me what's not awful about them.
Well, Cody Whitehair, we don't know. He's a rookie.
They draft.
Right. So you got a rookie offensive lineman. How often does that turn out to be a good thing?
They signed a couple veterans that have played a lot. Manny Ramirez, Ted Lawson, to get a little
they
bit.
They signed a bunch Lino of veterans was, that other teams didn't want.
I mean, Bobby Massey.
Got rid of.
Yeah, Bobby Massey, Charles.
Horanis Grisou has to face competition for his center job this year. This offensive line, Charles Leno is your left tackle. That's the worst left tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, Conan, I think I'm going to keep the job, actually.
Yeah, that's a
brutal offensive line.
Yeah, it's not a perfect team. I was more excited about the defense and the fact that they overachieved last year, but you're right.
Basically, Wes is taking your entire like sky-high level of enthusiasm and setting it up.
No, Wes, I think, and I are on the total same page. I don't see them much different than the Lions.
I like their wide receiver core in front seven. There's nothing else about the Bears I like, especially their quarterback, who's a competitive disadvantage.
Well, that's where
I like their defensive coordinator.
That's where we disagree. Well, not the defensive coordinator. I'm with you on Fangio.
You stand throughout history on the side of Jay Cutler and see who's right in the end.
Do we feel like –
He's just okay. That's all I'm saying. He's okay.
You lose Adam Gase. I think that – he helped a lot of those players overachieve last year, and I'm not a huge Dowell Loggins guy, so let's see how that works.
Coordinator corner with Mark Sessler.
No, I just, you know what?
Staining your voice.
Dowell Loggins.
Against him.
I, you know what? I'm not going to take up 10 minutes of the show, but he's got a few issues on his resume if you want to look at his time in Cleveland.
I would love to hear Mark Sessler 10 minutes on Dowell Loggins. Like, that might be the best 10 minutes of the show since you came up with 32 words to describe the Cowboys defense.
One thing about Loggins, if you're trying to keep Cutler happy, and it seemed like he was last year, they are buds. They're very tight. And when Loggins was in Tennessee, there was all that rumbling about them wanting to trade for Cutler and run their what they have now, which is a smash mouth, beat you up offense, the myth of all myths until we see it. But Cutler and Loggins, they're tight.
Cutler played well last year. Like, Cutler was a better quarterback.
No, he played very mediocre, and everyone acted like it was well because it's Jay Cutler, and the expectations are so freaking low that if he has a decent season where the passer rating is almost to Brian Hoyer level, then it's a good season for Jay Cutler. Give me a break.
Hey, and passer rating was 92.
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, same as Brian Hoyer.
Andrew Luck.
The league average, was like 89.
No, the league average was 91.8, I believe.
So can you make the argument that he's an average or maybe a tick above average quarterback?
He's an average quarterback.
But not a team destroyer.
Well, he's a coach destroyer. Look at his history.
What is the quarterback? I mean, now it's if it's 90 or whatever for the average. When we were growing up, Wes and I, back in the Kennedy administration. Yeah, I mean, it was much, much lower.
I don't see these two teams as different.
Kennedy administration.
I know you're going to come at us with an age shot, so I cut you off at the pass. We're not nearly that old.
Got to get some food in Mark's belly.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it does come up a lot, though, just the generation divide between the cousins.
Which is absurd because you guys are like five years younger than us. Dan has more gray hair than all of us put together.
It pops up, though. It pops up. I mean, you played Stratomatic. That was, you know, a little before our time. That was kind of the cutoff, the old Stratomatic.
An intellectual game for young people.
My whole thing, by the way.
How can you imagine that?
Young baby boomers. Like Wes and Mark. Mark does have a Stratomatic long form coming up this summer.
I was trying to set him up for a little.
Talk about a metrics goldmine. How will the team sites respond to that? They'll have to go look up to figure out what it is first.
Was this like a subversive exercise to stick it to the team sites?
No.
That would be cool weird.
If it was. I would like to come up. I'll come up with a few of those. That would be a lot of work for a little response.
Wow.
Well, we look forward to it. And we'll definitely talk about it on the podcast when it lands, Mark's Stratomatic banger. Any final thoughts about we don't really have time to get into the other teams in the NFC North, but be plenty of time.
Packers fans are very unhappy with
that. We'll talk to them.
Hang in there, guys.
Let's talk to about them next time. I do have a final thought. Yes. My thought is not that these two teams are so different. It's that the Bears feel like a team that is ascending. And if I was a fan of, I think there are some things to get excited about. The Lions feel like an in-between team that has a new GM and a head coach. I think they're set up to underperform a little bit. These are both 5-8 win teams. I just think the Lions are going to be lower. And then they're going to have a new coach again next year. And then they're changing it all again. Like, I just don't see this Quinn Caldwell Cooter thing lasting forever.
I mean, we talked about this earlier in the week, or was it last week? I don't remember.
Last week when they missed their window.
The window that was never really open in the first place closed, and now you lost a generation of talent.
It was the window for the sixth wild card team.
The refs banged them the year that it was open.
That's how you end up on the pain rankings. You're one of those teams that you never get your window properly propped open, and now it's closed. And somehow they talk themselves into keeping Jim Caldwell. I mean, you know, it just seems like this is an organization in transition, whether they know it or not.
One huge bonus about what we've just done here, and this is a good management by Greg, and it's A-plus management because, you know, Kevin Patrick could not be – there's multiple, you know, IM tweets about how upset he is that the Lions get overlooked, blah, 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 and he's right, but we've settled him down. He's back in a good mood. He doesn't even know why yet.
We just buried his team without asking him to talk about it too.
Well, we mentioned them. We didn't say it was going to be. It's going to be honest.
He said he agrees with you.
Yeah,
he's the number one critic.
I talked to him separately. You know, before I wrote any of this kind of
smart move. We got to get K-Pat
management
on the show.
Day for Greg.
Yeah, I give you a pre-grade show of A- for your management, and you exceeded it.
Wow, that's the highest compliment you've ever given to me for my management.
We gotta get Patra on the show because Patra, who is
the only one,
salt of the earth as they come, and a good guy and a good
salty of the earth,
salty of the earth, and a good football writer. He's found love, as everyone that follows him on Facebook can attest, based on his profile pic, him and his little ladybug in an embrace. On a beach somewhere.
And if you read what she has to write, no, and she seems delightful. And what she has to write is she's plugged in, completely tuned in to Patra's crankiness, and she's on board. I mean, she's made multiple mentions of it. Am I wrong? Like,
I thought that's just how everyone
I have a lot of like, connection with
Detroit
her.
Right is.
Now. I've never met her. What is she?
No, on Facebook when she's described an outing with Patra or a photo, and Patra in the photo, she's very happy, and he's got this like he's just got a Patra look, and she seems to be on for the entire Patra experience.
I just love this crusty snuggle bug.
I gave myself a Facebook suspension until Donald Trump is out of our lives.
It might take 8 years.
Oh, my God.
All right.
What a depressing note to end on.
Yeah, we will be back tomorrow. Three shows this week where we will talk about something. It's not clear. Actually, no, we did have an idea what we wanted. Oh, we're going to talk about the Dalton scale tomorrow.
We are?
Okay.
We are. Again. So get your thinking caps on. The annual Dalton scale discussion will take place tomorrow where we kind of figure out where some of the 10 to 20 area quarterbacks
well, we need
rank in
to, we
the
need
NFL.
To officially rename the Dalton scale because we have
we'll figure that
Andy
out
Dalton has.
I think it's Dalton scale in perpetuity.
Wow. Well, Wes disagrees, so we'll have to discuss.
I mean, they don't call the Mendoza line something else now.
Well, Alex Smith scale was getting some heat.
The Tana scale.
Tana scale is great. Great ring to it. Anyway. Okay, so we'll be talking about that on Thursday's show. So thank you for listening. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. Get some food in that belly, snuggle bug. The mailman, the boss, and Irish behind the glass. Till Thursday!